right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, on the line, I've got Pete Quinones, and he is managing editor at the Libertarian Institute and author of this brand new one, How Members of Gun Culture View the Ahmaud Arbery Killing. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Pete?
Thanks for having me back, Scott.
Hey, man, real quick, you got a documentary coming out soon, is that right?
Yeah, I do. It's it'll be released to the public on YouTube on the 31st, and then soon after we get some things squared away, get it up on Amazon, and then down the line, after it does well on Amazon, then Netflix kind of thing. So cool. If it doesn't get banned,
if
somebody doesn't step in and say, yeah, that's too subversive for the public consumption or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I hope you edited my piece as much as you possibly could in there to spare everybody their eardrums.
We edited exactly what you thought would be. We just put in there what you thought were the most important points.
Okay,
and
good.
I think it will. I think it'll work, especially with some of the overlay that we have that our buddy Danny Scherson supplied us. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be wonderful. It's good. A good section of that is going to be anti-war, and that was really important to us.
Yeah. So I haven't seen the whole thing, but I did kind of page through and notice what good company I'm in there. So thanks for having me in that thing. That's really cool.
Couldn't have done it.
Lots of big names there.
Yeah, there's no way we were going to do that and not have you in it. So
yeah, well, there you go. I wish I could have come up with something instructive for you, but instead you just got what you got. Anyway, hey, let's talk about when is this thing coming out?
It'll be on YouTube on the 31st of this month.
YouTube on the 31st of May. Great. And that is called The Monopoly on Violence, huh?
Yep. Feature length, be about an hour and a half, and all of our friends are going to be in it.
Great. That's great. Good for you, dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. All right.
Two years in the making.
Yeah. Well, it better be good then. Or as I put it when I was writing my book, people better like this thing. So, yeah. Labor theory of value there, man. You know, it's hard to not believe in it when you're the one doing the hard work. But yeah. All right. Now, let's talk about this important subject. Tell me some things about, first of all, the Ahmaud Arbery killing. And then secondly, toward your headline here about the reaction of gun culture to what they've seen in the video here.
Well, let me just do a quick timeline of what happened with this shooting. And Ahmaud Arbery, 25-year-old man, shot to death on February 23rd in Brunswick, Georgia. Brunswick is like, if anybody knows Jekyll Island, it's right outside of Jekyll Island. So it's over on the coast.
Land of the central banks there.
Yeah. And he was shot after being followed by Gregory McMichael, 64 years old, and Travis McMichael, 34 years old, his son. They were in a pickup truck. Arbery's family says he was out jogging, while the McMichaels have said they thought he was a burglar. And this is according to the police report. Gregory McMichael armed himself with a 357 Magnum, and his son grabbed a shotgun. And this will be the... just them doing that right there will be the crux of my article. So let me just go on a little bit here. So I grabbed the shotgun after Gregory McMichael saw Arbery hauling ass down the street. The police report said, according to the report, a third man later identified as a neighbor, William Bryan, tried to block Arbery during the pursuit. Now, a lot of people are saying William Bryan is actually a homeowner of a property that's under construction that Arbery allegedly went in and was looking around. But it's come to light that that's not true. He is not the homeowner. I'm going to get to that in a second. So Greg McMichael told police that he thought Arbery was a burglar who had recently been targeting the neighborhood. The McMichaels told police that they caught up with Arbery. He attacked Travis McMichael, who fired his weapon in self-defense. And the Brunswick News, citing documents that were in public record, reported that there had been just one confirmed burglary in the neighborhood from January 1st to February 23rd. It was the theft of a handgun from an unlocked truck parked outside Travis McMichael's house on the first of the year. Go forward a couple days, the first prosecutor recuses herself. The Brunswick area district attorney, Jackie Johnson, recused herself from the case, noting that Gregory McMichael, a former Glynn County police officer, had been an investigator in her office for more than 30 years before he retired in May of 2019. Now we're going to jump forward to, that was February 27th. We're going to jump forward to April 2nd. Brunswick News publishes details of the police investigation. They published an online article with details from the Glynn police report. Gregory McMichael said that after the pursuit, Arbery began to violently attack Travis McMichael and that the two started fighting over the shotgun, at which point Travis fired a shot. And then a second later, there was a second shot. Gregory McMichael said Arbery fell face down on the pavement with his hand under his body. He told police he then searched Arbery for a gun. The report said, the report ends without stating whether Arbery had a gun. Arbery's family says he was unarmed, and nobody to this day is claiming that he was armed. Next day, April 3rd, a second prosecutor recuses after finding no reason to charge the McMichaels. George Barnhill, one of the prosecutors who first handled the case, defended the actions of the McMichaels and Brian, who recorded a video of the shooting. In a letter recusing himself addressed to a Glynn police captain, Barnhill said the three had solid firsthand probable cause to pursue Arbery, a quote-unquote burglary suspect, and stop him. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reported this. It appears their intent was to stop and hold this criminal suspect until law enforcement arrived, he rose. Barnhill, who said he watched the video, said Travis McMichael was allowed to use deadly force to protect himself under state law because Arbery had initiated the fight and grabbed the shotgun. Going to jump forward about 10 days. A third prosecutor takes over the case. The case was transferred to Thomas Durden, not Tyler Durden, but Thomas Durden, the district attorney for Georgia's Atlantic Judicial Circuit on or about April 13th, according to a letter Durden released May 5th. He announced his intention to present the case to the next available Glynn County grand jury for consideration of criminal charges against those involved in the death of Mr. Arbery. That was April 13th. Jump all the way forward to May 5th, so that's 10 days ago as of recording this. Video of shooting emerges online. Apparently, this is just a side note, the person who took the video thought by releasing the video, it was actually going to help the McMichaels case. That didn't turn out to be what happened. So the video was released into public domain to the public, and the Arbery's family lawyer got a hold of it, and that's how they were releasing it, because as soon as it was released to the police, then it became open. So it appears to show the fatal shooting and an altercation in the moments before. In the video posted by Arbery family attorney Lee Merritt, Arbery is seen jogging down a road as a white pickup truck is stopped in front of him. Arbery runs around the vehicle and a shot is fired. The video then shows Arbery and another man appearing to tussle as two more shots are fired. NBC News, they're saying NBC News, who's reporting on all of this, doesn't know what happened before the events in the video. Mm-hmm. The same day, the outside prosecutor Durden said he wanted to send the case to the grand jury to decide whether to bring charges. Lawyers for the Arbery family said authorities did not need to wait for a grand jury to make arrests. And the lawyer said there are a number of agencies that can go out and make these arrests today. That is our demand. The man who murdered Arbery should be prosecuted. The lawyer called on Durden to issue an arrest warrant and to indict Gregory and Travis McMichael. GBI, Georgia Bureau of Investigations, announced that it would be taking over the case at Durden's request. So the DA there said, this is a hot potato, give it to GBI. Mm. So it goes public. May 7th, Gregory and Travis McMichael are arrested. GBI announced that McMichaels had been arrested on charges of murder and aggravated assault. And I will tell you, I'll explain the aggravated assault charge, where I think it's coming from, and it's the only way it makes sense in this, when we start talking about the article that I wrote and the points I made in there. Mm-hmm. That McMichaels could not be reached for comment. It was unclear whether they had obtained attorneys. So March 8th, neighbor who recorded video is also being investigated. A day after the McMichaels were arrested, the head of the GBI said William Roddy Bryan, the neighbor who recorded the video, was also being investigated. We're going to go wherever the evidence takes us, GBI, Vic Reynolds says in a news conference. Let's say, hypothetically, if we believe tomorrow or in a week or 3 weeks there's probable cause for an arrest, then we'll do it. If we don't believe there is, then we won't. Bryan's not been charged. Asked about the possibility that the McMichaels could be prosecuted for a hate crime, Reynolds noted that Georgia is one of the few states without a hate crime law. And sort of good. May 9th, video appears to show Arbery entering a construction site just before he was killed. And just to mention, some people have said it's not him. Some people have said it's him. This is everybody's fighting over this. I mean, it's ridiculous at this point. Video from the day of Arbery's death, obtained by Atlanta Journal-Constitution, shows a person matching Arbery's description walking up to a house under construction, entering and then leaving shortly after. Attorneys for Arbery's parents said the video is consistent with the evidence already known to us. The lawyer said the person in the video remained on the property for under 3 minutes before continuing to jog down the road. Ahmud did not take anything from the construction site. The family's lawyer said he did not cause any damage to the property. He remained for a brief period of time and was not instructed by anyone to leave, but rather left on his own accord to continue his jog. Ahmud's actions at this empty home under construction were in no way a felony under Georgia law. GBI confirmed that it was reviewing the video, but added it had seen it before arresting and charging the McMichaels. So GBI arrested them even after seeing this and this quote unquote new evidence.
Right.
The next day, May 10th. So we're talking 5 days from when we're recording. Georgia Attorney General asked for federal investigation. Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr asked the Justice Department to investigate the handling of the killing. So they're investigating the DAs, how these guys weren't arrested right away is basically what they're looking at. Attorneys for Arbery's parents applauded it. And so the next day, May 11th, Arbery killing switched to a fourth prosecutor. The state's top prosecutor appointed another district attorney to take over the case. Joyette Holmes of the Cobb County Judicial Circuit became the fourth prosecutor to oversee it. Hmm. Cobb County is about 10 minutes from me. So we're talking about 3 hours away. So they went, you know, a couple hundred miles away, or more than a couple hundred miles away, to find someone to prosecute this. And they say, she's a respected attorney with experience, both as a lawyer and a judge, and the Cobb County District Attorney's Office has the resources, personnel, and experience to lead this prosecution. Uh-huh. Yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, she might as well have the same conflict of interest as the rest of them, but go ahead.
Yeah. So 3 days ago, GBI receives request from State Attorney General to investigate handling of case. Georgia's Attorney General has asked state law officers to investigate allegations of misconduct by local prosecutors in the death of Arbery, the GBI announced Tuesday. GBI said Attorney General Chris Carr requested for the investigation of how the District Attorney's Office in Brunswick and Waycross handled the February 23rd fatal shooting. Then we had this incident just a couple days ago. This was May 11th. So this is how we find out that the under construction home that Arbery's allegedly seen in isn't owned by Mr. Bryan, one of the people in the pickup truck, which is something that people who've been defending the McMichaels on social media have been saying. So Mr. English, the actual homeowner, released this statement. He said, Mr. English wants to correct the mistaken impression that he had shared this video or any other information with the McMichaels prior to the McMichaels' decision to chase Mr. Arbery. People were saying that they had seen video of him in the house. And I'm going, how do they see video of him in the house? Was it being live streamed into their home? or something. And I was at you would ask these questions and people would be like, well, I don't know. This is what I know. So the homeowners had not even seen the February 23rd video before Travis McMichael shot Mr. Arbery. So they didn't even see the video from that day. When homeowner Larry English saw the photos of Mr. Arbery that were later broadcast, his first impression was that Mr. Arbery was not the man captured on video inside the house on February 23rd. And he had actually said that to a neighbor at the time. And this guy was, the homeowner was 2 hours away. So just a little more information there. And then today it comes out that McMichael, who used to be a cop, used to be an investigator, who was charged in Arbery's death, lost power to make arrests after skipping use of force training last year. So he lost his ability to make arrests, and he also lost his ability to carry a service firearm. So that's where we're at right now. And anybody who's seen, people have been making videos about this. I've seen ex-cops make videos about this all over the place. I mean, this is one of the most convoluted, he said, she said, I think I know what I'm talking about. That person thinks he knows what he's talking about. I decided to take my article in a totally different direction of something that I actually know I'm talking about, trying to use this case to help explain to people why what they did is in Georgia, where I've lived for 15 years, is culturally unacceptable to gun owners. So,
I mean, that's the point, right? Is that gun owners would be, according to, I don't know, liberal Twitter, they would be out in the front of the mob justifying these guys and accusing the black guy of must have been stealing something or something, right?
That is the stereotype of, you know, even a Puerto Rican, half Puerto Rican New Yorker like myself. When I moved to the South, and I live in Georgia for 15 years, and I adopt the culture of gun ownership and, you know, being a gun fanatic, I get called the same thing. So,
yeah. But then, so what is their point then? They're rallying behind the boys in the pickup truck or not?
Well, I've been going. The first thing I did was I wanted to see what my friends were saying. So there's a forum here in Georgia, huge gun forum. A couple of years ago, there was 40,000 members. It's got to be more now. And I knew that if I was going to, I looked at it, I judged what they did, and I had my perspective. And I wanted to see if people who were trained in firearms like myself had the same perspective in Georgia that I did. And, you know, I'm a libertarian, I'm an anarchist, and you know, I think all these laws are ridiculous, but I also live in the real world. And these people that I'm looking at here are for the most part conservatives. I mean, we're talking Trump supporting conservatives, but very pro-gun, very anti-red flag law. To give an example, this forum that I was on at the time of the Trayvon Martin shooting by George Zimmerman, they, to a man, took George Zimmerman's side. Mostly it was overwhelmingly George on the side of George Zimmerman. And so, yeah, these aren't liberal hysteric, you know, who happen to like guns. I mean, these are guys who are, you know, come from the right side and a lot the far right side of the aisle, but they also have a subculture that has some unwritten rules. And it looks like, as far as I've seen, they consider the McMichaels to have broken those rules and thereby forfeited their freedom.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now talk about that. I mean, I think even, you know, any reasonable person, even if they're not gun owners, if they're not a liberal hysteric, just a normal person understands that gun owners usually are extra responsible because they recognize the power of that machine that they have there to do very dirty work in very short time with very little effort. I mean, that's kind of the whole point. And so usually you give somebody a gun, you watch them grow up by 2 years right in front of your eyes, you know? But so go ahead and, I mean, talk a little bit about that, the gun culture and the culture of responsibility that comes with owning guns here.
But just to give a really good example, because it wasn't funny when it happened, but it turned out to be funny because it just became a meme on the web, on this forum, was a guy came on there 5 or 6 years ago, and he started bragging about how he was walking in downtown Atlanta. A homeless person came up and asked for change, and he pulled his gun and just waved it at the guy, and the guy ran away from him. I assume he came on the website. Now, I don't know if the guy's telling the truth or not. He could just be, you know, one of those people who just make stuff up. But he came on the website, on the forum, thinking that he was like a hero and he was going to be hailed as a hero. That was the exact opposite of what happened. People explained to him, you don't pull that thing out unless you have justified, reasonable, you have an idea that your life is in danger. In other words, you don't pull that out unless you absolutely feel like you have to pull the trigger. Like your life is in such danger, or somebody else's life is in such danger that you have to pull the trigger. And as I explained in the article, that doesn't mean that you pull it and you see that the person, you know, is responding in a way where they're going to go into flight and you decide not to pull the trigger. That's fine. But the fact that you pull it, you better have every excuse in the world for pulling that trigger. And that is just an unwritten rule that is lived by in gun culture. And I put this article out. I've had a couple people come after me, and it's never about the gun culture and what we think. It's always about, well, it was a black guy, and, you know, and I've been trying to keep race out of this. See, I read
in
this
other words,
whole,
people to the right of your gun forum group, they disagree, but over at the gun forum, this is their point of view. Same as the story about the bum being scared off. It sounds like your take is everyone over there agrees that these guys had no business acting the way that they acted here.
Now, you're not going to get everyone to agree on any forum, because you're always going to have some people that have to be contrarian on everything, and you're going to have some jerks and racists. It just happens. But I mean, overwhelmingly, I mean, just some of the comments.
The consensus, in other words, is beyond question here.
Yeah, the former cop, he says, if there's no more to the story, then the two should be prosecuted and jailed for life. The guy was clearly not trying to confront them. He runs miles and miles every day and lived nearby. However, one thing gives me pause is that even the New York Times is hedging somewhat. They stated that the man was seen running from inside a home under partial construction, and the homeowner called 911. Well, that's not true. The homeowner was 2 hours away. But that's what was being reported at the time. I mean, all this misinformation is being reported. And he writes, but even that wouldn't constitute the use of deadly force in this case. Another one said the kid wasn't carrying anything. Those two confronted and went looking for a fight. Definitely not justified in my meaningless opinion. Real sad. Based on that video, the shooters ought not stand in the sunshine anytime soon. But we know what should happen, and what does happen aren't always related. Maybe he was, this one guy says, maybe he was taking a leak. Don't know. But this D-bag PI wannabe and his kid sound like some straight up cowboys to me. Citizens arrest and armed pursuit, LOL. I wouldn't have stopped for them either. And then another one. I saw zero justification for use of force in that situation, regardless of the jogger's previous actions. This looks like some straight up redneck justice profiling BS. One has to wonder if they just shot him in the back if he tried to keep running. Another one. I don't give a damn what the circumstance was. Based on the video, those scumbags murdered that young man. And then the last guy says, and you know, a little bit of pontificating here, but he gets to the point. I prefer to let relevant and current facts determine the circumstances rather than digging up old articles to try and sling mud to make my predilections justified. The fact he was a high school athlete or attended college or what his specific career aspirations was are irrelevant to the fact he was unarmed, shot dead by two redneck wannabe cowboys who thought they had an in on the cover-up with one of their former bosses, the DA. Their plan sucked. Now they get to win stupid prizes. Won't bring him back, but he died pretty quickly. They get to sleep with one eye open for a long, long time. I'm sure they'll be well-received in a South Georgia prison.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the part that remains to be seen with this guy's at least pale blue privilege if, you know, he wasn't on the clock as a cop at the time. And yet, that's the other huge part of this story is the delay in the arrest here. And I don't know, this wasn't on your fact sheet there, but I had seen a story where the cops who showed up at the scene were ready to arrest them both. But they called the DA and the DA told them not to. But they were ready to put them in handcuffs right there on the spot before she intervened to stop it actively. So
you want to know one of the main reasons why, and I'll come back and I'm going to go back to something that I said in my notes. They were arrested for, let me get this again. The second thing was aggravated assault. So I think it's murder and aggravated assault. Mm-hmm. Why is aggravated assault in there? Well, like it or not, there's a law in Georgia that if you pull a gun on somebody who's not threatening you, that's considered aggravated assault. And you're looking at 20 years. Mm-hmm. So like that guy who flashed his gun at a bum, you know, at some homeless person, if a cop would have seen him do that, that would have been he was looking at 20 years in prison. They don't take that lightly even now. There's actually a bill in the House in Georgia trying to change that, but that's neither here nor there. And whether that's a fair law or not, oh well. But what I've seen is I've seen people try to argue that jumping out of the truck with a shotgun, well, that's just open carry, and open carry is legal. Well, technically, yes. Okay. In Georgia, you can throw a rifle over your shoulder and walk down the street. You can carry a shotgun in your hand and walk down the street. But not when you've blocked off the street from somebody. You have another person jumped up in the bed of the pickup truck screaming at him.
Yeah.
They're clearly with a gun in his hand.
Yeah, they're displaying deadly force in order to try to make him stop. So that's open carry.
But I mean, I see people trying to use that argument. And I'm like, that's just not how this works, you know? Mm. And it's like, I actually had one person say, and if I said to you who said this, you know exactly who it was. They said, so you think it's okay for somebody who's running down the street to try and grab a gun a gun of somebody who's open carrying?
Oh, God.
I'm like, wait a minute. What are you leaving out here?
This is such a stupid era, isn't it?
It's just it really is.
It's a time of stupidity.
And a lot of people will say most of that stupidity is on the left. Look at the way they treat Trump. Look at this and look at that. There's just equal stupidity
it's
on
everywhere,
the right.
Man. Yeah.
Everything. Oh, I got to stay with my team so that we can fight the other team and be at war the whole time. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, when you do that and while you guys are fighting over there, you know, sometimes that war has collateral damage on the rest of us. And those of us who want individual freedom tend to lose it because you people are being idiots over here.
Yeah. And, you know, it is important what you say, too, about where the vast majority of the right, they're not looking at this and, you know, of gun owners, particularly very Tea Party Republican voter type guys, that they're not looking at this as a racial issue. They're looking at it as an issue of one man killing another and
blue privilege.
And so the point is that, yeah, there are right wingers who do care a lot about the racial stuff, but not anywhere near the majority. And it should be instructive to people who come from the left to recognize that despite all the smears, that most right wingers are not racialists in any way really at all. And certainly not to the degree that they're going to side with a murderer over an unarmed victim just because of what skin color team they're on. I mean, that's crazy. So yes, people will pick and choose their facts to justify certain things, but mostly that's still marginal. As stupid as this era is, at least in this case, it seems like reason has the center, you know?
And you also have to take into consideration when you look at this whole situation. And when I say situation, I'm talking about guys running down the street. I don't care if he's running if he's just out for a jog or if he's running from something. You have a pickup truck that cuts off the road and people get out and they're armed brandishing weapons. Then you have somebody in back of them cutting them off so that they're trapped how often do you see this happen? This doesn't happen. I mean, when was the last time you saw this happen? The 50s?
Yeah, and how was he supposed to react to this?
Yeah, I know how I would have reacted. If I would have had a gun, I would have shot everyone. And I would have been justified in doing it. They pulled guns out. They got out. You block off the street for me and get out with a shotgun in your hand? I'm starting to shoot right there. I mean, it's insane for anybody. And to bring up, he may have just been burglarizing a house. That's completely beside the point. Once you get down to the situation in the street, obviously he didn't have anything in his hands. He's running in shorts and a t-shirt. If he was concealing a gun, he was doing a really good job of it. Didn't pull it out. I mean, there's no justification there. Now their blue privilege of the dad may keep them out of jail, but I mean, the rightest of right wingers in Georgia in the gun culture are like, yeah, what they did was completely wrong. If we would have done it with no blue privilege, we would have been arrested that day and probably already pleaded out and gone to jail.
Right.
That's what they're saying. And I know that that's what would have happened to me.
Yep.
If I did something that stupid.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, it's amazing to me how people are looking at this video and interpreting it just based on their own worldview.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of that, but I appreciate that. As you're saying here, it's not a question of libertarian non-aggression principle. It's a question of gun owners' non-aggression principle. And when people, especially people walk around armed, concealed or open carrying or whatever it is, well, they think a lot about and very carefully usually about. When they might have to use that firearm and when they absolutely may not. And at what line is it crossed where now it's official? Any reasonable juror would agree that you had no choice but to do it. And so, in other words, they're thinking of it very carefully, like a man with a hammer in his hand, about just how to hit this nail right, rather than maybe coming at it from a more generalized point of view. They're looking at it from, as you just said, if they were the ones who had done it, not a former detective, but just Mr. AC Repairman or whoever out there, that they know for sure that they are not allowed to do that, that that is absolutely crossing the line and that they would go to prison. And so universal justice, it should apply. The fact that this guy used to wear some shiny costume jewelry shouldn't impress anyone at all.
But I think I would also add that even if what they did and brandishing was legal, I think most gun owners would condemn it.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
I don't think they're looking at the law and allowing the law to dictate what their morals are as far as, carrying something that can end multiple lives in a matter of seconds.
Right.
It has to do with the fact that a lot of it also has to do with optics. It's like, every gun owner that I know who's serious about their weapons looks at that video and goes, if it would have been them getting out, holding guns in their hands, and Aubrey would have just ran by and just kept running and, nothing would have happened. Gun owners would still look at what they're doing and going, you're spoiling it for us.
Right. Just you're passing another law against us.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I haven't seen anyone commenting on this in a way of criticizing, saying that it was a good shoot that is in gun culture. As a matter of fact, ever since I put this article out and ever since I did a podcast earlier this week, everyone who's contacted me who said positive things about what I had to say are in gun culture and Southerners. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we know you're not a Southerner and everything, but now you're one of us because, you have the same sensibilities we do.
Yeah. I like how you say, too, all the detractors are just completely irrational racists and don't really have a point other than whose side are you on. So,
I mean, I don't know if they're all racist or not. I mean, I would assume that that does play into some things.
No, thought you said that was what they all immediately go to was.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, a lot of it is, you know, it's kind of hard to look at that video and, you know, and I didn't mention race once in the article because that's not really important to me, but it is really hard to look at that article and not go, what year is this?
Yeah, or the video, you mean, yeah.
I mean, the video, yeah. The video. It's like, no, it's what year is this? It was just, when I first saw it, I was just like, wait a minute. He got out with a shotgun in his hand? And he's a white dude, and there's a black dude running down the street, and they've closed off the street from him, and they've closed off the street behind him? And I knew there was going to be people defending this. And I was like, well, I know no gun owner is going to defend this. No serious gun owner is going to defend this, because it's just like, well, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of those gun owners are law and order guys. So what would they do? They'd call the cops. They would call the cops. And, you know, and then people were saying, I heard people saying, oh, well, you know, because he worked in the DA's office and Arbery had been arrested a couple times, he knew him. He recognized him. I'm like, well, if he recognized him, then he probably knows his name, can find out his address with a phone call.
Right.
So why not just give the cops that? Oh, so now you're on the cop side. You want the cops. I thought you were an anarchist. Yeah, I am. But I also live in a world where I know if I go do that.
Yeah, and they're not anarchists. They're a former cop and his son. So what is that? What does libertarianism have to do with the decisions that they made?
It's just ridiculous. I mean, it's just dancing. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Yeah, it's just.
People are crazy. Hey man, you guys are going to love No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. It's a fun and interesting read all about how to run your high-tech company like a good libertarian should. Forget all the junk. Read No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. Find it in the margin at scotthorton.org. Hey y'all, here's the thing. Donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show and you can get a QR code commodity disc as my gift to you. It's a 1 ounce silver disc with a QR code on the back. You take a picture of it with your phone and it gives you the instant spot price and lets you know what that ounce of silver is worth on the market in Federal Reserve notes in real time. It's the future of currency in the past too. CommodityDiscs.com or just go to scotthorton.org/donate. Hey guys, Scott Horton here for ExpandDesigns.com. Harley Abbott and his crew do an outstanding job designing, building, and maintaining my sites, and they'll do great work for you. You need a new website? Go to ExpandDesigns.com/Scott and save $500. Brilliant. Let's switch to a different crazy one. So this one's in Kentucky. And so this happened, what, like 2 months ago? The cops killed this lady, Breonna Taylor, and it does matter that she's a black woman. It is part of the story. And then this was just buried. It finally came out. I'm sure all the usual grifters, you know, helped to promote it. Thank goodness in this case. But, you know, and I know that you haven't done as much work looking into this one as the previous case here. This is actual cops, not ex and wannabe cops like down there. But, this one in Kentucky is also really bad. Can you explain what you know about what happened here?
Apparently, Breonna Taylor, from what I understand, she's an EMT. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's an EMT. She was home at night.
Was studying to be a nurse, they say.
Yeah, studying to be a nurse. Home, sleeping with her boyfriend. And from what I understand, around 12:30 in the morning, the police go and get a no-knock warrant. I mean, that's how all these stories start? You know, in the middle of the night, no-knock warrant, you know, Duncan Lemp. And
sorry, I gotta say, when I was a kid in elementary school, the state of Texas mandate that they teach us anti-communism. And when they did teach us anti-communism, the way that they explained it to us was that in the Soviet Union, the cops come to your house and take you away in the middle of the night. They kick in your door. Everybody else is asleep or is, you know, in no position to help resist. And
you know, it's, and in fact, it's the dreaded knock. They don't even, you know, Americans use a battering ram. The NKVD at least knocked on the door and let you get your bathrobe before they disappeared you. But this was when I was a boy, which was not that long ago, if you ask me, the 1980s, in, when I was in elementary school, you know, in the Ronald Reagan years. This was the definition of totalitarianism, the enemy that America stands against. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, they were at the wrong house, too. The person they were actually looking for was already in custody. And this is the Louisville Police Department.
How do you like that?
I wrote an article about the Louisville Police Department 4 or 5 months ago from their sex abuse scandals of their youth programs. I mean, Louisville Police Department has a long history of just problems. And so, yeah, they get a no-knock warrant. They go there because they, oh, somebody we believe delivers drugs was seen coming out of that apartment, and a box went in with a box and came out empty-handed. Well, they do the no-knock raid. The boyfriend wakes up. He has a gun. He starts shooting. So they just light the place up. As many as 20 rounds are shot. She shot in her sleep 8 times and dies. The boyfriend has been arrested for attempted murder of a police officer.
You know how many times he was shot?
I don't think he was. He? I don't think he was.
Yeah, I don't think so either. From what I had read, so... what the hell kind of wild shootout is that? Speaking of your unwritten firearms rules, aren't you supposed to know what you're killing? They missed the guy who actually took a shot at them, and instead they shot an innocent person 8 times?
An
unarmed woman?
And her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, he ended up shooting a sergeant, John Mattingly, in the leg during the incident.
Small consolation.
Yeah, but... this is just one of those, another one of those no-knock warrant, like you said, Soviet style black bag kind of attitude when you're going Duncan Lemp, the whole Duncan Lemp thing in Maryland.
Yep.
4:30 a.m.
Yep.
Why would they do this? Why don't you just wait until the person leaves the house?
Overtime.
Arrest them. Yeah.
It's they overtime. Get paid
that's
more.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And Bovard says that.
Yep. They get and the fun of dressing up like a paramilitary, you know, Delta Force operative or whatever.
So you know, they were blindly firing. I mean, she got hit 8 times. You know, they talked about total disregard for human life. And I mean, could shoot through the walls and hit other people. Nothing illegal was found there. They had a drug warrant.
Yeah, on that last point, I mean, they said that the stray bullets went into multiple different apartment buildings or, you know, apartments in that building.
So, yeah, so the family's suing. And you know, there was is another one of those cases where it's like, no, you know, well, you're going to get put on the police are going to get put on administrative leave until we can investigate
this.
Two-week
vacation.
We'll investigate this and find out. They'll investigate themselves, find out they did nothing wrong.
Yeah. Well, and you know, they're going to make the mistake, too. I was just talking about this with Mike Meharry earlier today about you're going to call for a civil rights investigation, and that's going to kind of remove it from the local jurisdiction where they might have a prayer of accountability if they push hard enough. And instead, they're going to turn it over to the Justice Department. But that's such a narrow mandate. Unless they were screaming the N-word as they were pulling the trigger and essentially using their police power position as cover and operating under the color of law just so that they could do a KKK lynching or something like that. Unless they have a case like that, it's not a federal civil rights case. And it's just, you know, the federal civil rights jurisdiction is not if there's a bad shoot. It's if you can ascribe these other racial ulterior motives to the police abuse that takes place. And so, in other words, DOJ investigations are where bad shoots go to die. You know, even if, I mean, in most cases, the local DA is going to do what our friends down in Georgia did there for him. But still, at least you could have a chance with enough public pressure of getting an indictment on the local level. But the feds almost never, they just essentially kill a case by touching it.
And we've talked about that before, too, that the only way, quote unquote, public servants ever get in trouble is if enough political pressure is put. And then they just sacrifice somebody.
Yeah. If this is one of your family members and you find out not only were they at the wrong apartment where the guy that they were after did not live, but that, in fact, the search warrant was attached to an arrest warrant and they had already arrested him somewhere else before this warrant was ever even issued. So, again, back to the question of how easy it would have been for them to just knock on the door and do this in the daylight without dressing up and playing Navy SEAL at all. You know, the bad guy, supposedly, in other words, the drug businessman, allegedly, was already in custody. And of course, they found out after they were done removing her corpse that there were no drugs in the house whatsoever. And I don't know if it was the wrong address or this guy used to live there 5 years ago or what their problem was. But the two victims here, the deceased and the charged, had nothing to do, apparently, with the guy that they were looking for. Is that right?
Yeah, they were stand-up citizens as far as anyone can, you know, quote-unquote stand-up citizens, as far as anyone can tell. I mean, when I said this a long time ago, I said police have to stop the no-knock warrants because you get a home invasion, all somebody has to do is scream police. You know, you have some crew of bad guys coming into your house, they scream police. I mean, I sleep with a gun next to the bed. If I hear police, it may make me hesitate in picking it up, but it could also be bad guys. So they knock down a door in the middle of the night and he's armed, and the gun's by the side of the bed and he picks it up and starts shooting. How can you blame him?
He clearly did not think that he was trying to kill a cop at that
time. No, he's reacting.
Yeah, of course not.
He wasn't the one they were looking for. They didn't find any drugs.
By the way, they referred to her as the suspect for more than a month. This wonderful, innocent woman that they knew good and well wasn't any kind of suspect. And that also is another bone I have to pick with every local TV news anchor in America, that they don't give a damn about helping the cops smear some dead victim. They know whose side they're on. Every single time they take the side of the executioners against the innocent American civilians.
Every time.
Man.
Every time. You know, and then you have, then it goes to the courts. You have decisions like it was a Graham versus Connor, where you can't question what a cop thought in the moment. I mean, you can't question, you know, the fact that it was an innocent person. All you can do is judge the cop by what they thought in that moment. And they thought that the person was a bad guy. It doesn't matter that it was somebody standing in their window looking to see if somebody was breaking into their house.
Yep.
None of that matters because you have to protect these people who, you know, weren't good enough to get a job in the private sector or not smart enough. I mean,
again, judge made law. You know, conservatives always rail against those judicial activists. Well, there's not a legislature in America that ever got together to say cops can have a license to murder Americans. It was the courts, the Supreme Court, that made up qualified immunity. And they probably borrowed it from Carl Schmitt and the Nazis. That's not the American way. If that's the American way, how come it's only been the American way since 1981?
Yeah, it's
when
amazing
a judge invented it.
It's amazing how we celebrate defeating the Nazis, but then as soon as somebody kills an innocent, as soon as a law enforcement officer kills an innocent person, they jump right to the Nuremberg defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just told to go there. I was just doing what I was told. Right.
And you know, people too, they think back about Waco. You always hear this, no more Wacos. There's Wacos every day. The only thing what's unique about Waco that it was a 51-day siege? Because the paramilitary style raids happen every single day. It's just that the Branch Davidians won the initial battle. That's all. But otherwise, same thing happens day in, day out. Hey, Radley Balco says 50,000 SWAT raids a year. And it's a miracle how few people they kill, honestly.
Yeah, that is the remarkable thing about it.
And think about that. 1,000 SWAT raids a week. 1,000 a week.
For what? And it's, and almost all of it's because of the drug war. It's almost all because of the drug war.
Yeah, man.
And most of this, and the most of those, a friggin' plant that grows out of the ground.
Yep. Vast majority. And of course, the vast majority of cocaine users in America are a bunch of Republicans in the nicest neighborhoods who are never subject to raids like this. And I'm not saying that they should be, but I'm just saying they're the same coke consumers who support the drug laws that are enforced against everyone else in the most totalitarian fashion. You know, the fact that there's even one case, the fact that you ever hear about somebody was framed up on charges, some innocent lady did, you know, a month even in jail because she had some cotton candy that the cops assumed was meth. I mean, when you hear any cases like that ever, that ought to be enough to call this whole thing off. You know, people, the cops breaking into people's houses in the middle of the night in the name of contraband, in the name of contraband, not, you know, and not sarin, right, but weed or cocaine or what have you. It's completely nuts that the American population support, you know, will allow this to continue at all. It's just.
And these are the same people who will look at pictures of cops busting open barrels of booze during Prohibition and go, God, they were so stupid. Why'd they outlaw that back then?
Yeah, the same people now who are saying, how dare the cops enforce my containment at home? What do they think this is, a totalitarian country or something? But they're the same people who cry, thin blue line, man, and love America, and how dare you take a knee while they're singing my special song, boy, whenever it's anybody else other than them complaining about the very same police state. You know, for all these people, all the right-wingers protesting the lockdown, has your opinion of Black Lives Matter changed at all? You think any of those people might have had a point at all? When they took a knee claiming that they were protesting the police and you refused to believe them and said, no, you're protesting the military that fights for our flag and everyone knows our military is way beyond protest. How dare you, you unpatriotic America haters, move to Cuba. Very same people with their thin blue line flag that they, you know, on their truck that they drive to the lockdown protest, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I noticed too, most of the protests you see are right wingers marching on the Capitol of states where the governor is a left winger, is a Democrat.
Right.
When, you know, living in Georgia, you have Brian Kemp, who's a right winger who basically got elected by aping Trump, acting like Trump and having ridiculous ads. That were Trumpian kind of ads. When he shut everything down, no one marched on the Capitol.
Right. Yeah, it's all just partisanship. By the way, I want to mention here, I just like this headline. I hadn't read the article, but at Rolling Stone, the headline is, Breonna Taylor was always essential. The young EMT didn't need to be a hero. She just needed to be alive, which goes to kind of the way we introduced this. And reiterated that this lady was an EMT and during a pandemic. And but even if not, you know, this is a fine, upstanding public servant, whether she worked for a private ambulance company or not. You know, this was a woman who was very valuable to the rest of us. But so what? That shouldn't have anything to do with it at all. The only person that she was responsible to was her own self. That's the only person she owed. And if her dream in life was sitting around playing PlayStation, that would have been just fine, too. As long as she could afford it, you know. You know, her life wasn't any more valuable because she was an EMT. If she was nothing but a bum, they still didn't have the right to murder her. And so, by all means, it's important to mention, you know, that she's sort of the poster child for upstanding citizen, right? But she didn't need to be. She's a human being. And that's as simple as that. That should be the end of the argument.
I'm sure at this point her family would be very happy that we weren't mentioning her name. That she was just going about her life, just doing her job, living out her life, and that we didn't have to talk about her.
Absolutely right, man. All right, so one more here, man, as long as we're on the cops. Talk to me about what's going on in Parkland there.
Oh, man, this is the best.
It's not funny, everybody. It's absurd. That's what it is.
So everybody was just, you know, I've been talking about court cases like Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, Warren versus District of Columbia, a new one that I learned and will be on one of my podcasts next week, Lizito versus New York City, where the cops failed to protect citizens when they had a chance. I mean, when they were right there in the vicinity and could have protected them and decided not to. And in one case, like Lizito versus New York City, actually hid and cowered while a guy was being stabbed almost to death.
I remember that case.
A serial killer. I had Joe Lizito. I talked to him the other night. I'm going to release an episode with him this week. Well, what happens when the people who the cops failed to protect sue the police because they weren't protected? Well, nothing, because the police have no quote unquote special duty to protect an individual. Parkland should have showed that to everyone when Sergeant Brian Miller stayed outside while, you know, the kid was shooting up and killing 17 people, shooting up the place, killing 17 people. But just this week, it was announced that fired Parkland BSO deputy gave his job back with full back pay. The union went to work for him.
And this is, now I want to make sure I understand it here. This is the guy, the school resource officer who was there the whole time, or this is one of the guys that showed up later?
This is the school resource officer who was, he was found hiding in his car when the first shots rang out, will be reinstated, and he gets back pay of $138,410.25.
Well, so what you do is you get the two guys with the white pickup truck to come down and lynch this guy. Since the law doesn't apply to him and common sense and ethics. And I love, too, in this story how it's the I'm blowing the line here, Pete. Help me out. The what do you call the adjudicator or whatever? The arbitrator who's decided this.
Yeah. It's
because that's in the contract. Is that's who gets to say some arbitrator accountable to nobody.
Yeah, and probably who's getting paid from the same source that this detective is getting paid from, or this sergeant is getting paid from. All getting paid from the same place. Yeah. Sergeant Brian Miller. Yep, he was. They actually fired four for neglect of duty, but this one was Now I'm trying to figure out if this is the actual school resource officer. But
I think he was cowering behind a pillar. If this guy was in his car, I think maybe he came later, but then still was afraid to go in.
Yeah. So one who, there was.
Can you imagine that? Your child is in a school getting shot to death and the cops are there and they cower outside and refuse to even try to intervene to save children. I mean, world is this?
Yeah, Scott Peterson was the resource officer. This was was one of four that were actually captured on camera in the car, not leaving it.
Unbelievable.
I'm looking at a still picture of the camera.
And you know what?
Now.
Like, remember in Saving Private Ryan, there's the ammo kid who gets afraid and freezes up on the stairs or whatever. Yeah. Like, I could see that could happen to anyone probably, right? Even the toughest tough guy might just totally have a panic attack in a bad situation. But how do you explain five of them? You know, what the hell is that? There's stand down, men, as the gunshots are going off in a school.
And what's funny is people love to just bring up this thing called the social contract, where the government takes money from us. And since they're taking money from us, they have a responsibility to protect us and build roads and, you know, do all this stuff. Well, contract is two-way. They take the money they're supposed to protect. If they don't protect, contract's null and void. There is no social contract. Not if, and this base, that whole Warren versus District of Columbia, Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, Lozito versus New York City, it all just disproves that little myth there that, oh, they protect us. They steal the money from us to protect us. Or else they wouldn't protect us and we'd have no roads. And
I got to tell you, man, every afternoon I get the email update from the Free Thought Project. It just came in. And here, as cops who kill unarmed teens keep jobs, Alabama cop fired for smoking a little weed is one. And then the other is this, the cop fired for cowering in car as gunman slaughtered children gets his job back and with back pay. But I'll tell you what, you sign up for the Free Thought Project email list, it will absolutely ruin your late afternoon, every single late afternoon. And if you look at the blog at the Libertarian Institute, you'll see that I react to at least one of them almost every day. And the headline writes itself, cop kills man. Or cops kill man. You just move the S around, depending on whether more than one were shooting at the guy that they killed at the same time. And it's almost always someone unarmed. And, you know, occasionally you do have stories where a guy pulls a gun on a cop and cop blows him away. Well, it takes your chances. Those are the breaks, you know. But most of them are not. Most of them are, well, you know, he made a furtive movement. His hand was, he was obviously reaching to pull up his pants, but I'm going to say he was reaching for his waistband. And everybody knows that you could keep a gun in a waistband, and that'll be good enough for any court in this land. Oh, sorry for rhyming there.
Yeah.
Could have said country, you know.
You got me in a bad mood now, Scott. Mm. You got me in a bad mood.
Yeah, well, good. Go and sign up for the Free Thought Project. It will
dude, you know,
make sure
I go
you never
to Free
smile
Thought
again.
Project every day.
It is. It's totally nuts.
And I have to be reminded of just how. Yeah, and I'm one of those people who I'm not sympathetic. I just the job that they're given to do, I don't think a human being can do it. A human being should not the way that job is set up for them.
Yeah.
You know, the old idea of the peace officer who's only going to resort to violence to protect himself or to protect somebody else, that's, I mean,
well, look,
I
there's
mean,
no check and there's no balance. I mean, even if you believe in the state, you know, say on a minimalist kind of basis, you have to have accountability. And right now, there just is no accountability, or whatever accountability does exist for cops who kill people is totally marginal and is only the exception that proves the rule, that they get away with it all of the rest of the time. And so imagine that. Imagine being a cop and your job then is all the things that come with being a cop. And you know that pretty much no matter what, it's kind of carved in stone at the entrance to the police academy is wink, nudge. No law applies to you anymore. You can do anything you want and they will never lay a hand on you. So throw a bum off a bridge, rape some lady, or shoot some black guy in the head or white guy in the head or whatever it is. You're going to skate, man. It's going to be fine. So go ahead and do your worst. They all know that going in. So it's not like they in the back of their mind are afraid. They're like, uh-oh, what if there's a camera on me right now? They don't care if there's a camera on them. They're going to get away with it anyway. So, you know, that'd be the one big thing to fix would be the, you know, to overthrow the Supreme Court ruling that says that laws don't apply to cops, that the only thing that restricts their behavior is whatever they feel like, which is essentially what that ruling says.
Yeah. I gotta get going, so.
I know, me too. Thanks, dude. Appreciate it.
Hey, can I plug?
Oh, yeah. Say all your things, of course.
Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I write at libertarianinstitute.org, and I have a documentary coming out called The Monopoly on Violence. It'll be on YouTube on the 31st of May and soon after on Amazon. Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.